Hello and welcome to the Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. Welcome my guest today, Natalie, a web accessibility expert.
And my host is Natalie, an accessibility novice.
Thank you for joining us today. This is our second episode where we're going to go into detail, down to the nitty-gritty, about what is WCAG. We're going to explain what it is, how it's structured, who uses it, and over some last details not many people know about. So stick around for the end of this podcast to learn everything there is about WCAG. All right, Natalie, let's kick us off. What is WCAG? What does this acronym stand for?
It stands for the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, and it's a set of guidelines that let us know how we can make content online accessible so that it will work with people's assistive technology and browsers.
And who even develops and maintains this?
A secret group. No. It's the Web Accessibility Initiative, which is part of the W3C that oversees all of the standards for the internet.
Mm-hmm. So not the secret society of Illuminati at the Denver airport. Thank you for
clarifying. No, unfortunately not. That would be so much more interesting.
Now, let's go into why it's confusing for a lot of people, because when I first started learning about WCAG, I was incredibly confused. I didn't know where to look. Nowhere really lays out how to use this.
Yeah. I remember you were really struggling at first to understand how it was organized, how it was set up, how it was structured. It's pretty confusing. You know, we have a committee who's designing it. So the members on the WAI are just different representatives from the tech industry. Who get together to write the WCAG guidelines. So you have a committee, first of all, of people who don't work together, you know, full time. They work for other companies and they're just coming together. They're not necessarily trained in data structures, how to design a data schema. So that's another challenge that they're up against. They have some pretty strict rules around maintaining backward compatibility and not being able to change numbers or update existing rules. So when they realize something needs to be added, it has to be added as a whole new rule and things can't be renumbered, right? So that we have to know if I talk to you about 1.3.4, that's the same. It doesn't matter if that happened in 2004 or 2014 or 2024. 1.3.4 has to be the same rule. So they have that they're up against. And obviously, technology changes all the time, browsers change all the time, but WCAG has to stay the same. So it's a real challenge to try to kind of maintain that and stay on top of it, but keep it relevant.
Yes. And could you go over some of the information that gets posted on WCAG?
Yeah, what do you mean?
I mean, like, whenever they're writing these, like, who are they really targeting and why is it so hard to read?
Sure. They are definitely targeting very technical implementers of the accessibility rules, because you pretty much have to be a developer to go in and understand what they've written about, you know, what is 1.3.4. And how do I tell if what I have done is passing it or not? And if it's not, what do I need to do to get it there? It's very technical and very dense and difficult to understand if you don't have a really good knowledge of how HTML and CSS and JavaScript all work together to try to figure out what those rules mean and how you would go about using them.
What is WCAG used for?
It is used as the measuring stick for accessibility. So that's how you tell if you've built something to be accessible, is does it meet this set of principles, you know, it's the beginning of that. How can I tell if my website is accessible? Well, you check and you see, does it follow this set of rules? Does it meet all of these guidelines?
Right. So it's either a yes or no. You are or you aren't.
Well, if you go by that yardstick, everything is a no, because there's no such thing as something that's 100% accessible.
True. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
All right. So with all that said, we're here to explain it. We're going to break down the structure and go over how to understand WCAG. So, Natalie, do you want to start with the organization?
Sure. So you have a whole set of success criteria, which are the individual rules that you need to meet, which are things like your images have to have alt text or some kind of text alternative. So somebody who can't see your image for whatever reason can still understand why that image is on the page and what's in the image, what the context for the image is, and all of that. Another success criteria would be color contrast. Is there enough contrast between your foreground and background color? You can't put really dark gray text on a black background, for example, because nobody's going to be able to see that. So that's another example of a success criteria. The success criteria are then gathered up, the ones that are related to one another. Those are gathered up into a set of guidelines. So now we have them in groups of guidelines. So an example of a guideline would be just distinguishable, like, and that has to do with the color contrast. How big is the text? Can I resize the text? Have I used a color alone for distinguishing two things from one another? So if I have, for example, if I had a list of foods and I wanted to say which ones I liked and which ones I didn't, I can't just put the ones I like in green and the ones I don't in red, because if somebody can't perceive green and red, they don't have that information. They can't get that information. And also a screen reader isn't going to read out what color text is presented in. So I have to have another way, right? So I have to put, like, maybe in parentheses at the end of each item, like or dislike, so that that data is available in another way. It's okay to still use color, but you can't use color by itself. So that's another success criteria. So like that one and text resizing and which other one did I just say? Oh, color contrast. Would all be gathered up into a guideline called distinguishable. And then all of the guidelines get gathered up into another bigger bucket that are the principles. And we have four main principles in WCAG, and they spell a word, so it's very nice. Poor, P-O-U-R. So perceivable, just can people perceive this content with whatever capacity they have? Operable, does it work? Can they actually, you know, open your drop-down menus and make different selections on your form fields and do any, you know, does everything work? And then U is understandable. Can we understand how this website works? So that's where you get a lot of overlap between accessibility and usability. Can we understand how this is all put together, how it's organized, how it works? And then the R is for robust, which means does it hold up? Does it hold up as new browsers are released, as new technology is released, as new devices are released? Does it still work no matter what browser and screen reader combo I happen to be using? Does it still work no matter what device I happen to be using? And that's where, that's what falls under the R for robust.
Perfect. Now, I remember I had a misconception that I thought each principle corresponded to like a specific set of disabilities.
Oh.
You remember?
Yeah, no. They all apply to everybody.
Yes.
So it's a real mix of things. Like perceivable, for example, we immediately, and a lot of people have a misconception that WCAG is all about building websites for people who are blind. And yes, that's part of it, because people who are blind are in the group of people who are disabled. But people might also have all kinds of other disabilities that would impact their ability to perceive content on a web page. So if you don't have hearing, you're not going to be able to hear the audio track of a video. Or if there are alert sounds or something played in an application, you're not going to be able to hear those. So you need an alternative. Somebody can be both deaf and blind, and they should still be able to use your website by hooking up a refreshable braille display, and everything should be fed to that correctly so that the website can still be navigated and all the content read and understood. Somebody could have color blindness and unable to distinguish one color from another, and they should still be able to read a website and understand what it's all about. So there's lots of different things that would accept somebody's or impact somebody's perception, but they should still be able to use the website. And all of that would fall under that principle of perceivable.
So let's go over the success criterions in terms of how to meet them.
Because the articles are so user-friendly to understand it. Yeah, it takes some getting used to go and read the articles. So, you know, there's a website. The WAI has a website that outlines every single principle, every single guideline, every single success criteria, tells you how to meet it. they give you techniques. So there's two types of techniques, sufficient techniques and advisory techniques. So a sufficient technique is one that's enough to meet the success criterion. And an advisory technique is starting to move into that best practice territory where you don't technically have to do this to pass this role, but it would be really nice if you did. It would make things better for people. And they are very technical because they are getting into the nitty gritty of exactly what settings you should have in CSS or HTML or exactly how your JavaScript should work. So they, if you are not a coder, you might really struggle to go and understand those guidelines, but you have to be able to hire somebody that you trust to be able to read and implement those things, or maybe you want to learn it yourself, which is great too.
Do you want to go over the failures too?
Oh yeah, each one has failures, but the failures are kind of odd in that they don't cover every possible way something can fail. So most, I think not even all, but most of the success criteria have specifically defined failures to say if this is happening, then this success criterion has failed. But like I said, not all of them even have those. So that can get a little bit confusing. And then even the ones that do have those, they're not comprehensive. So if I look at a success criterion, it's got three possible failures. Well, there might be 10 more ways that success criterion could fail. So they're not comprehensive, which is also frustrating.
Yes, very frustrating. All right. So to stack onto that, we have the different buckets to organize the WCAG success criterions. We have each one has techniques, failures, sufficient, advisory techniques. Now let's go over the other layer, which is the levels of compliance.
Yes. So there's three levels of compliance built into WCAG, which are just A, AA, and AAA. A would be the bare minimum that you can do to even say that you tried to make something accessible. AA is generally considered to be the standard. So most countries or states or municipalities that have laws around accessibility, those are usually based on WCAG AA. So that's generally what people mean when they say an accessible website. They mean it complies with WCAG AA. And then AAA is the highest level of compliance that makes the most accommodations for the most number of people. And it is challenging to achieve just because of the sheer number of rules. And sometimes there are conflicts between rules also. So that makes it harder than AA to achieve. And even the WAI themselves don't recommend that you actually try to meet 100% of AAA compliance just because of the burden that it places on your development team. and the time, and then therefore the money that it would cost to actually achieve, to fully achieve AAA compliance.
Yes. And I remember when I first learned about this, I thought AAA compliance was just the most difficult, like the rules in AAA were going to be the hardest to implement, but that's not true.
That's not true. Some of the rules in level A are actually pretty challenging, and some of the rules in AAA are actually pretty easy. Like just talking from a technical point of view as a developer, like how hard is this to implement? It's not necessarily tied to the levels. It's based on what are the basic things that somebody needs to be able to navigate a website. So it's not at all based on the development side of things. It's based on the user side of things.
And just for the audience back home, Natalie, how many success criteria exist in the latest release of WCAG?
Well, I actually don't know the answer to that. I think it's around 60.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Oh, geez. I was way wrong. There's 87.
Okay. Cut. We're back. Natalie, let's go over the success criterion really quick, just to give the audience a little peek or a little understanding of how many of these there are.
All right. So total in WCAG 2.2, total for AAA, so all of them, there's 78. 26 of those, so like a third of them, are AAA only. So you wouldn't need to implement them if you were going for AA. And then there's the remaining 50 are the single A and AA.
Yes. And so if you needed to meet AA compliance, you'd have to go through all 50 of those and make sure you're rules. Sufficiently meeting those standards.
Yes. You have to have implemented at least one sufficient technique for each one, for each bit of content on your website.
So there you go, you guys. That's how WCAG is structured. There's many layers. It's like an ogre. It's like an onion. We hope that gave you a better understanding. We got to move this along. So who uses WCAG? Just a really quick, brief overview.
Anybody who's working in web accessibility uses WCAG. So designers and developers who are building websites would use it. Accessibility professionals who are testing websites or remediating them to make sure that they're accessible would rely on WCAG. As I mentioned earlier, different laws use WCAG. So lawmakers use WCAG for determining what they mean when they say we want to make a law that all the websites have to be accessible. So it gets used in that way. Just by anybody who wants to implement or understand web accessibility, that's where they get started.
Perfect. Now, we told the audience something that a lot of people misunderstand about WCAG. Do you want to go over it?
Sure. That you can make your website 100% compliant with WCAG AA, and that does not mean that your website is 100% accessible. There are lots of other things that you could do. Of course, even if you're at AAA, even if you meet 100% of AAA, there are still other things that you could do to help make your website more friendly for people to use. So really, achieving WCAG is the bare minimum that you should be doing for accessibility. It's not the final destination. It's not the ultimate achievement.
Mm-mm. Not until you have the actual users who really depend on it test it, right?
Yes, you have to have real users. Try it out. Can they get to everything? Can they use everything? Can they find and read and get all the content out of your videos and your audio and all of that? That's the real test.
Thank you, Natalie. Well, that pretty much wraps up everything. Where can we learn about WCAG? Where can we get more information?
Well, if you're technically minded, you can go to the WCAG guidelines published by the WAI. Just a quick web search should bring that up for you. But if you'd like a more user-friendly approach to learning WCAG and apply to your very own website, you could go to Aardvark and scan your homepage for free and get back information, helpful user-friendly information about what the accessibility issues are and how you might fix them.
Mm-hmm. And favorite feature, you can filter all your issues that come up in the scan by WCAG success criterion.
That's a new feature.
So,
yes.
With that said, thank you, Natalie, for going over everything we needed to know about WCAG. Maybe not everything, but a good chunk of it. That's kind of hard to find, honestly. And like and subscribe to the Aardvark Accessibility Podcast. We'll see you guys next time for a new exciting podcast on another new topic. What will it be? I don't know. Find out next time when we post again.